Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Hello, Miss Justine. So, do you have any particular questions from what we've been talking about this time so far? It was all clear as mud. How many people, yeah?
One question about consciousness that rides on, and I can't remember.
Consciousness, which has no legs, rides winds, which have no eyes. Interesting, isn't it? So, phenomena is particularly a sentient phenomena is three qualities: consciousness, the winds, and the motive to ride, or the direction you want to ride, or three qualities, which are called guna in Sanskrit. So you find that through, in particular, in the Theravadin tradition, but it's harder to see in the Theravadin tradition, but in particular in the Tibetan tradition, where you find, for example, Ratnasambhava, which represents feelings, personified as wisdom, when feeling is not... the five feelings are physical-like and dislike, or pain and pleasure. Mental, pleasure, unhappiness, and neutrality. Mental, it doesn't matter to me. Neutrality. Sometimes that neutrality can be disinterest, and sometimes it can be equanimity. Right? So those are the five types of feeling that we have. Right? All sentience. However, Ratnasambhava is the jeweled. The Ratna means jewel, state of jeweled being, and it is a jeweled state not when one is ruled by those feelings, but when one knows how to use those feelings. For instance, in Christianity, you have Christ saying, "I give you the keys to the kingdom, that you could loose what should be loosed and bind what should be bound." Is that familiar to you? Mm-hmm. Many of you should have heard that if you grew up in North America. How many of you grew up in North America? Mm-hmm. So how many of you are familiar with that? All of you put up your hands again, right? And then that is the loosening and the binding are done with the emotions, right? With whether you like or dislike something, aren't they?
Yeah.
You dislike something, then you loosen yourself. Or you try to. Quite often that binds you to it. You notice that if you really dislike something, you tend to be aware of where it might appear everywhere. So you're continuously living with the presence of it. If you're afraid of a circumstance, you think it could arise anywhere, so you get so you're afraid to go anywhere because you'll meet that circumstance. So your life is ruled by that, even though you're, you know. It's true, isn't it? So, but generally speaking, loosening and binding are done by the emotions, but most of the time the loosening and binding are done without us being conscious. And so we repeat behaviors and repeat behaviors, unconsciously creating a binding to one thing and a loosening to another. And we don't see the minute by minute dropping of the effect of that action until it's built up into such a strong reaction. Am I making sense?
Mm-hmm.
We perform an action over and over and over, unconscious of what its result is, until its result becomes so powerful that we are suddenly saying, why is this happening? You know, like, gee, this has never happened to me before. Because we haven't wanted to see it before. But really, like and dislike should tell you something about what you've already experienced, but should not tell you about what you will experience. Is that clear? Because if you use it to tell you about what you will experience, you're rewriting the future through the dictatorship of the past, not allowing yourself to have a new experience. So therefore, it's impossible for you to walk a new way in every moment. And the person that is binding you, putting you in the prison of the past, is yourself. But you don't see that because you don't see how you surrender yourself to like and dislike. Many people actually feel they have no choice because they can feel themselves, that's all in quotes, tightening around like and dislike, and they believe they are the tightening. They don't say, oh yeah, there's that tightening, and there's space around it, right? The focus just goes on the tightening, and they actually believe that that there is no choice, not aware of the spaciousness within which that tightening is one factor. Because what you like from one point of view, you can dislike from another. All of us have had that experience, haven't we? You really like pumpkin pie unless you've eaten about 23 pieces in a row in 5 minutes. I remember one time I was addicted to corn chips, and you've probably never had addictions, any of you here. So I'll only speak of some of my more polite addictions in your company, because I know you're a sensitive group. So one time I was addicted to corn chips, and I decided that I would break my addiction by eating so many of them. So I did. I bought lots of them. And then I sent this person out to buy more for me, because I realized I was going to get all the way through them. So I ate more than lots of them, and my lips were cracked and bleeding, and my tongue was sore, and my belly hurt, and I still wanted more. So I just kept eating them, and I had like blood. And I had sores all on the inside of my tongue and around. And I kept eating them. And finally, I did not want to eat another one. And 3 days later, I wanted corn chips. Does this sound familiar? Maybe not corn chips.
Chocolates.
Gee, there you go. Yeah, or behaviors. Or behaviors.
Yep.
So there is a point where you realize that Like is never satisfied. When I was in Ontario recently and I was at the classes I was doing there on Vajrayana Buddhism, there was a real gap in the foundational knowledge of the people attending the class, in that some of them didn't know what the Four Noble Truths were. And I was going to teach Vajrayana Buddhism. Not. So what I had to do was consider ways to talk about the Four Noble Truths while continuing to talk to the other people who did know what they were. You know? So one of the things I asked them to do for homework was to tell me whether any of their desires were ever satisfied. They had a week, you see, in between classes. Now, it's okay to go chasing after your desires if you don't pay attention, because then you never notice that they're never satisfied. But when you pay attention, at a certain point you realize it doesn't matter how many corn chips you eat. There might be a moment where you don't want any more. It won't exactly be satisfied desire. But within a period of time, you're going to want more again. And no matter how many you eat, there is something that is not satisfied. You become aware of that, don't you? The nature of desire is that it cannot be satisfied. There can be a temporary cessation of your discomfort with desire. Isn't that true? The thought that if you want to, you can turn the television on, and so you do, and there's a temporary cessation of the discomfort. But then it comes up again with something else, so you allow yourself to say, well, yeah, I could do that, and then it dies down. It's the discomfort about the desire that you actually are trying to get rid of. You're not trying to fulfill the desire, because that's not possible. Does that make sense to you? This discomfort is called dukkha in Buddhism. Dukkha. And it means dissatisfactoriness. No kidding. And there is dissatisfactoriness. There is. To try to arrange your life so there isn't means you'll find yourself through your life being driven into a smaller and smaller place, a tighter and tighter fit, fewer and fewer options. You think it's not true? It's true. If you do not recognize dukkha, you are going to find yourself driven into a smaller and smaller fit, a space, with more and more reasons why somebody didn't understand you. Something should be different. Someone should appreciate you. Some circumstance was given to someone else that was not given to you. Do you understand that? Mm-hmm. But you will continue to collect evidence about why there has to be some way for you to be special. Do you think I'm right here? Mm-hmm. You've seen this then, have you?
Yes.
Interesting, isn't it? Can you understand that everybody has that? Isn't that curious? your children, who you wish not to have any suffering, feel exactly the same. Your parents, aunts, uncles, your enemies, good, your friends, damn. And you. But mostly we just brush right by dissatisfactoriness, don't we? We love to tell another story, or don't we? Are we good at stories? Who here is not one of the most creative writers in the universe? Just watch yourself with dissatisfactoriness. You write extremely well. You're not bad at theater either. Are you? We're good, aren't we? But to actually feel the dissatisfactoriness and then be curious about it, that blows me away. That's what the Buddha did. Isn't that exceptional? There is a mind. Actually experience that dissatisfactoriness and then dare to be curious about it. You know, not the wimp thing that I always do. Oh, there's dissatisfied. Oh, I'll change the channel. I'll just pretend it's not there. I'll distract. Right? Oh my God, it's built up. Oh, now there's a major thing happening. Oh no, the roof is caving in. I'll call somebody. It's their fault. I'll sue. This has got to be one of the hardest things for North Americans to grasp. Because we actually have this secret feeling of guilt because we're not happy all the time. Don't we? We have this feeling we're supposed to have it all, don't we? And we don't even know we're caught in the illusion of materialism most of the time. We don't have a clue. We're just feeling kind of depressed. And, you know, this shouldn't be happening. Why? Well, because I, right? But not what is depression, only this shouldn't be happening. Not what is dissatisfaction, only I don't want to feel it. Here we are in this position where we actually have the greatest opportunity of understanding the power of the First Noble Truth, except we don't want to look at it. Because we don't have that much suffering. Not really. We have a lot of disaffection, don't we? Have any of you not been able to eat for the last 3 days? Could I see a show of hands? What, no hands? Any of you forced to, beg for food or money on the streets in the last 3 days? Could I see a show of hands, please? What, no show of hands? Any of you been physically tortured with a cattle prod in the last 3 days? Could I see a show of hands? What? No show of hands. Any of you feel guilty about the fact that you're not happy all the time, or you don't have the prosperity you think you should have, or you don't have the job you should have in the last 3 days? Could I see a show of hands? There's some honesty in this room. There's some of you that are not so honest. But yes, all of us. That is dissatisfactoriness. Turn and look directly at that and say, is this personal? Because you're assuming it's personal and then you're reacting to it, aren't you? Either try to cover it up or get something to make it go away, or, right? But to actually look at it and say, what is the nature of this dissatisfactoriness? You would get from being held slightly in a slightly better position by the entire of the world. You know, we're on the top of the heap. We're standing on the shoulders of the population of the entire rest of the world, animals included. And we have a view. Now, let's use it. Okay, I'm not being tortured. I'm not... And there is this dissatisfaction. Now, for the sake of all the beings who are holding us up, ask, what is it? This is the first noble truth. The Buddha looked and understood suffering. He understood there is dissatisfactoriness. He didn't try to get rid of it because it came up and he didn't like it. I don't think it's easy to grasp the first noble truth, do you? I don't think it's easy. But if you grasp it, it is a very powerful tool to take your focus off of I and put it on what is going on, what is the value, what is this life? Why did the Buddha have the power to ask? I mean, I think personally, my of course, because, you know, I can't go back 2,500 years and ask him, so my prejudice is... He looked at his wife and his newborn son, called Rahula, and he realized he had nothing to give them. Because there was nothing he could give them that was actually safe. Money can disappear. Health can disappear. Social position can disappear. It's true. And the only thing he knew that might be worth checking out was whether there was a spiritual gift. Without the material support, he discovered when he was meditating, you don't have the strength to find a spiritual gift. So it's not good enough to just trash the material, because you won't have the material support unless you practice kindliness toward the material. So you have to treat the material world appropriately. That means with kindness, with compassion, with awareness, with interest. Why? For the purpose of developing the spiritual view. It's not possible otherwise. If those two, the material, the desire, the material, the desire to be a potter, the material to be shaped, are working together for the aspiration of to find what is truly valuable, what does not move, that is called a spiritual life. If that which desires and that which is shaped are moving together with the aspiration to just get as much sex as you can, that's called a rapist, not exactly a spiritual life. If it's to get as much sleep, that's called a cat. Okay, maybe a bear. Some kind of animal, because they sleep a lot. Do you understand that? Consciousness, which has no legs, the desire, rides winds, the elements, which have no eyes. And the aspiration of that union, the power of the aspiration of that union, creates the form that those two together will make, and the activity of that life. You have three things going: consciousness, the winds, and the aspiration. That's it. Your whole life is created out of that. Those are the wish-fulfilling tree. You work those things, and whatever you wish, you will get. Jeez, eh? Scary, huh? Because that means whatever you've got is what you've wished. Which someone said to me not long ago, very nicely. Why am I always thinking about what else there could be? Because I have to really think that what I've got, I must have wished for. Or was wished for by some I, conscious or unconscious. I have a friend who wishes for peacefulness so he can pursue his plans. Mental. So he's got cancer. Not a painful cancer, just a fatal one. Good move, eh? All right, whoops, so I just wanted to also be here. Oh, well. Now you can wish for a cure. It might take longer because you wished unconsciously for so long. Do you think we've wished unconsciously for many things? Do you think we've often wished for one thing and then wished for its opposite and then wished for one thing? So sometimes you like what you got, but you don't like the wrapping? It's like taking a painkiller while you hit your head with a hammer, you know? Ouch, 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 ouch. Ouch. Sometimes my life has been exactly like that. I'm oversimplifying like mad. I'm only talking about one aspect of consciousness. But it's an important aspect of consciousness to understand. Ratnasambhava is called the wisdom of equality because whatever is desired is treated equally. You repeat a mantra often enough, the result of that mantra will arise. Equal opportunity, shopper, you know, is the mantra. You repeat this mantra, this will arise. You repeat this mantra, this will arise. At a certain number, this will arise stronger than this one if this one's said more than that one. You understand? Mm-hmm. Or if you don't like the way that's said, one of the most powerful things that creates the rebirth linking consciousness is habit. It's a good idea to clean up your habitual thoughts when you consider that one, isn't it? You could walk around saying, gee, it's nice that so many people like me. Gee, it's nice that so many people like me. And then reborn that habit will be some being who feels that it's really nice that they're liked, you know. So they'll probably be liked. As my beloved teacher Namgyal Rinpoche said one time, if you're not going to do this work out of compassion for yourself, then do it out of compassion for whoever's going to get on the horse when you get off. Because the horse is going to be running. You know? And we will tend to do things for others that we won't do for ourselves, won't we? So, you know, don't do it. Just leave it for somebody else. Just because we have the history to understand the circumstance of why this cause and effect is arising doesn't mean that just because it would be easier for us because we can understand it, that we have to do it. You can leave it for somebody else to muddle through and try to figure out and spend like 20 or 30 years kicking doorways before they figure it out. You know, you could do that. No problem. There's lots of Ruths, you know. They might clear cut a forest here or there, or, you know, pollute a river. But if it ain't one universe, it's another. I mean, you know. All beings are, after all, going to awaken. You can go that way. You can go anyway. You can go quickly, quickly. May I see the ripening of the seeds of karma and understand the preciousness of this life. You can go that way. May I understand the balance between the material body and the intellect, and how spirit is the one, the spiritual view is the one that mediates. May I understand the middle way? You could go that way. You could go as many ways as there are people. And probably as many ways as there are animals. And we do. We go all these different ways. Everyone is right. because there is no wrong, there is only cause and effect, which is dependable. You perform this action, this result comes. That's dependable. From the result, you know whether you want to perform the action again. If you don't like the result, then it's probably a good idea not to keep performing the action and being pissed off when you get that result. I mean, you can do that too, and that will have a result. You can explore like and dislike, or you can salute every time they walk through the room. It's your choice. They're worth exploring. Or you can wait until circumstances force you into a position where you have no choice but to dwell in close, intimate proximity with dislike, and then have to explore it. You can choose to explore it in small pieces, or you can wait until the universe presents you with a big muckin' dish of it. And says, here you are, just for you. Because life is an equal opportunity employer. It always gives the same. Gives what you give. Always. Guaranteed. Quite often, the only way you become aware of what you've given is by what you're receiving. And then you have to stop having your tantrum long enough to figure out whether you want to keep giving that. Don't you? Your personal sense of being insulted. Wrong color ribbon! Damn! Damn! So it's very interesting not only to explore whether desire is ever satisfied, but whether dislike is real. Which I highly recommend to you. I recommend that what you do is every day you find something you dislike and you see whether you can find anything you like about it. And I don't mean theoretically. Just as, you know, an idle little exercise. You know, nothing, there's nothing important about it. Don't get serious about it. Just play with the idea. Because we spend so much of our lives not playing with the idea of like and dislike, don't we? We react like that, don't we? We're like puppets, aren't we? Yeah, that's the description of right awareness that in the Eightfold Path. Yeah. How you practice right awareness is a very specific meditation. And the first thing is, when you see something you like, be aware that you like it. And then find something within it that you could dislike. Number two, when you see something you dislike, be aware that you dislike it, and then find something you could like in it. Number three, once you have discovered something you dislike and something you like, work on that until you can dislike it or like it equally. Number four, once you have found something you can like in what you dislike, work on that liking until you can like or dislike it equally, and really actually equally, all of these. Number five, which according to the Buddha, only a Buddha could do, or I think trying to do it could help you speedily become a Buddha, hold both the like and the dislike in the mind at the same time. Transcend separateness. And that's the description of right awareness of the Eightfold Path, the second last step of the Eightfold Path. That's very beautiful, isn't it? And deceptively simply put. Yeah, that by holding opposing points of view that transcends separateness. It's beautiful, isn't it? It's the Buddha. And that's what I'm suggesting to you, that you should not be so impressed with like and dislike. And it's hard not to be as a Westerner, because we're raised as if we are not supposed to have like and dislike. That we're supposed to satisfy it right away. You know? If there's something you like, get more of it. Something you dislike, paint it over. Get rid of it. Okay. Not just be present with it and don't act on it. So we lose a lot of our intelligence in habitual reactions. So if we lose a lot of our intelligence, how can we make an aspiration? Because you need to be intelligent to know what you want to aspire to, don't you? I think so. Is this interesting to you?
Yes,
sir. Are you just saying that because you know I like it?
Yes.
Oh. I missed you. He says, we know you dislike it. So, any questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
Yes, when you look at the four noble truths and you look at the first one and you're studying it, it seems that when you're looking at it, you never get past it because there is so much, I suppose, dissatisfaction.
There is dissatisfaction.
Yeah.
Being alive is a dissatisfactory circumstance.
Yeah.
There are three types of dissatisfaction. That's what the First Noble Truth does. It says there's three types. One is, you studied this. What is it?
First one.
Three types of dukkha, what are they?
So I think that's three poisons, I don't know. Satisfactions? No.
That's dukkha, period.
Yeah, okay.
There are three grades or types of it.
No.
Pain?
No, I don't.
Yeah. actual pain, actual torture, actual pain. That's one type.
Like getting what you don't want or don't like?
That's not exactly, yeah, that's not exactly, that's the Buddha talking about desire.
Oh.
He's pointing out that dukkha is present with desire and not as another.
Having to look after formations?
Maintenance?
Yeah.
Maintenance? I call it maintenance, it's easier. Third one?
Suffering and suffering. The knowing, just that knowing that there is suffering. Nothing particularly painful, nothing particularly to do but that knowing.
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, impermanence.
Impermanence. Yeah. That, okay, finally. This is it. I am so happy. Then you go to bed and then you wake up the next day. And you got that aftertaste in your mouth, you know. So you recreate the happy again, just keep it floating for a while, but every day it gets a little thinner, right? So that's like the impermanence. That even if you get it perfect, it doesn't stay. Even if you manage a God realm for a lifetime, it's only, what, maybe you can do it for like, you know, a kalpa, which is translated usually as an inestimable amount of time, in case you were wondering. I can't remember. What is it? 250 billion years is one-third of a kalpa, I think. I can't remember, but something like that, right?
From the last experience, you can't quite recall it.
It must be it. Thank you. Was enormous amount of time that you can that can be, but because it's a conditioned state, it's subject to impermanence, and so it's going to pass. And then the dukkha of when you have had something that was perfect, and then it's no longer perfect. That one to me was very clear from my hallucinogenic days when I would. Always, usually, generally speaking, when I took acid, it was always a very blissful experience. Sometimes there were the moments that were not so blissful, but overall, you know, whoever made me this being, there was a lot of attraction to God realms and a lot of ability there. So whenever I would slip out of this focus, this consciousness focus of this birth, it was just hanging out, you know, in the light, and just fine, thank you very much. But then coming down, and many, many times I used to be talking to people like on streetcars, in parks, you know, they're just trying to mind their own business. From it and the suffering of it no longer being. Does that make sense? It's called like the suffering of a fish yanked out of a pool and landed on hot sand. Because what was is totally. Does that make sense to you? So that's different than the suffering of maintenance of a body, of a house, of a car, of an image. It's different, isn't it? So there's three types of suffering, three types of dukkha. So what was it you were asking about?
Well, just that you're there and you can't go beyond it.
The whole point is that the Buddha was interested in knowing what he could find out of love that was dependable, that he could give. And it was not anything of this life, of this, you know, the horse riding the winds. It had to be something that transcended that, without destroying that, because you couldn't destroy that either. You can't trash that. You cannot trash the human condition, and you cannot transcend the human condition. But there is transcendence. And I was talking about that last night when I talked about the Sangha is clarity. Clarity is clearly perceiving the endless dance of cause and effect. The Dharma is emptiness, clearly experiencing the non-inherent identity, the non-existence of position. The Buddha is the non-duality of those two. And the Guru is those three as they manifest in the here and now. So what has changed with that? There's still conditions continuously changing.
We are not holding on to anything.
There is no one to hold on.
Yeah.
And so the Buddha said there is suffering, but no one suffering.
Yeah.
The Buddha said, I too use concepts, I'm not fooled by them, not fooled by them.
Even when you're on the path, you always come back to the first truth, though.
You never leave it.
You never leave
you
it.
Never, there is no need to leave it. Those are the four noble truths. Then the second truth, there is cause for suffering.
Yeah.
Nothing arises without cause. I often think it should be all thing arises with cause. Nothing arises without cause. I think you should state it in the positive and the negative. I think it's easier, you know, to grasp it then. The cause, ignorance. From ignorance, craving, false view, and conceit. From craving, false view, and conceit, the whole mandala arises. Consciousness forms the elements based on aspiration, and we're riding again. There is cessation of suffering by clearly perceiving the nature of cause and effect, of craving, false view, and conceit. The ignorance is penetrated, and transcendence of suffering. Suffering ceases. There is a way, there is something you can do about this. There is a way to do that. First, begin to look at the Four Noble Truths. That's the first thing. Right view. First, ask yourself, what is dissatisfactoriness? Now, isn't that where we started tonight? God, I'm classical sometimes, aren't I? What is the way? First, Four Noble Truths. Right view is the Four Noble Truths. That's right view. That is the right view. All other views are going to lead to more suffering and more habituation. The Four Noble Truths, review them, pay attention to them, be curious about them. Check it out. Second one, right thought. Right thought. Now we get your favorite guys, greed, hatred, and delusion. Non-hatred, non-lust, non-delusion. That's right thought. Right thought is thought with the absence of greed, hatred, and delusion. That's right thought. And you know what? It does happen. Quite often. Can happen more often if you practice the boundless states. Loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. Can happen more often. Anytime you spend a lot of time in beauty and celebrate it, and then share it with somebody, and then be glad that somebody else had the experience, and know that the experience of beauty is everywhere at all times for all beings. Those are the four boundless states. And you know right speech, don't you? Should know right speech. Right speech is you listening to me. Oh, no, that's... Damn, wrong again. Ah, that's wrong speech. Right speech must be me listening to you then. Yeah, that's it. Okay, I'm the audience and you're the speaker now. Right speech, but no lying.
Gossip.
Yeah, gossip, slander. It's slander, isn't it?
Slander, yeah.
Cutting, hatchet jobs.
Harsh.
Harsh. There you go. Pretty straightforward.
Well, isn't it the mundane in that? The underrated speech?
Yeah. What do we do? No lying. Dead speech. Dead speech. Yeah, the last one. That's the last one. Dead speech. Hatchet speech. Slander is harsh, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Is that it?
Isn't that like swearing? It's not under some circumstances.
Yeah, a hatchet is when you're talking to split a community or to split, you know. And so I think slander is hatchet actually. And harsh, yeah. lying, harsh, hatchet, and dead. Four types of speech, right?
So what is dead speech? Is that like
dead speech is when you actually use speech to deaden energy. I beg your pardon?
Distracting you come in there?
I'm sorry?
You're distracting speech.
You know what it is? It's a personal experience. You can feel when you're using speech to deaden energy, can't you? It doesn't matter, energy outside or energy inside. So if I were you, I would look more at your own self and see when you feel that. And then when you can feel it when you are doing it, you'll be able to, that same feeling will come up whether somebody else is doing it or you are. And then you know that that's dead speech. It's speech that does not go anywhere, that doesn't promote life.
Can it also be a type of situation where there's that one answer that kind of just kills up all the action?
Yeah, that's dead speech.
A bureaucrat's good at that sometimes, the catch-22 phrase that just stops the forward motion.
You have to be very good at that if you're going to be in politics or advertising. Because you have to stop growth here and promote it there. And we're all good at it when we're being politicians about something or advertising something, aren't we? Because you got to stop growth there and make it happen.
So right livelihood, it's really interesting.
So. Don't you think they're all interesting? The Eightfold Path is really worth a look. Not that you're going to live up to it exactly, but you dig at it a bit and it starts to make your own life more exciting. You know, if you really look at the Eightfold Path, even if you don't change your job, you'll start feeling like you're, you know, up there trekking on Mount Everest with the Sherpas. You take some real risks. And it enlivens your life. You had a question, Barry? Sorry.
Yeah. Okay, something, I'll tell you the concept I have, and maybe you can clarify more for me about speech. Okay, one thing is, I'm very lucky. I used to drink like a fish, I used to do drugs, and I know the dukkha of that, that, you know, seeking the pleasure and avoiding pain and whatnot. So I'm not...
You are very lucky.
Yes.
I agree.
And I see people around where I live in street works and whatnot
who don't have the articulation you have because they haven't stopped doing that.
Yes.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yes. Now, here's
what a blessing.
Here's the thing. I've, with my speech, I've told way too many people in way too many places about my past. You know, I thought, okay, I'm a Buddhist. I believe in impermanence. You know, people, things change. People change greatly. I've changed greatly. And yet I've told way too many people, way too many places about my past.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know, maybe it's that I feel like I don't have an exciting life in the present, so I end up talking about this stuff in the past. I don't know.
It doesn't really matter one way or the other. If you are now feeling that you have too much of people's... awareness of your past when you meet them, then maybe what you want to do is just not talk about your past.
Yeah.
Make sure you talk about your present.
Yeah.
That's all. Because they'll forget. People are much more interested in their own lives than they are in yours anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll forget the details of your life. Believe me, I've told lots of stories about my past. And most people forget them because it's not interesting to them. It's only interesting in the context of when I'm talking about it. But when they're introducing me, you know, if some young person is introducing me to his parents or something, he isn't aware of the fact, that he's introducing, you know, he doesn't talk about, you know, the time I lived on the streets or stuff like that. Mm-hmm. He's talking about his Buddhist meditation teacher. When they look at a Buddhist meditation teacher, they're not looking at somebody who was raised in a Christian environment. They're kind of looking at me and, you know. So every moment your past is reinvented by meeting with the other people's past. So you don't have to worry so much about that or even focus on that. More focus on, in the present, what is kindness. It will transform your past, because then that will make this moment your past. We're always creating our past. I have been so many things since I was Mrs. Quiet's little golden-haired baby named Cecily. Some of them are golden-haired, and some of them aren't. You know? But that's not the point. It's the aspiration. Does that help?
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer your question? What part didn't it get answered?
Well, you know, I guess here's the thing. Maybe I'll just add that a lot of times I either let someone know about my past, or they found out about my concussion and drinking and drugs and whatnot, and I've been judged a lot, you know. And
is that your problem or theirs?
Well, it wasn't my problem when I was on the way to a new career and they slammed doors in my face, because...
That was a problem?
Uh-huh.
Why was it a problem?
Because I...
Because you wanted something.
Yes.
And it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So your problem was wanting what you didn't have, uh-huh, and then being unhappy when you didn't get it.
Right.
But you didn't have it either when you were wanting it or when you didn't get it. So nothing actually changed in your circumstance. It was very hard for me to learn that in my own life. My assumption about what I had lost versus actually looking at the fact that I hadn't lost anything. And that I was addicted to being a loser. So that when I didn't get something, it was very clear to me that there were circumstances why I didn't get it.
Right.
Rather than, well, I never had it anyway.
Right.
So although what I didn't get did not diminish me in any way, I practiced being diminished by it. That was the mantra I said. So that mantra continued to play in my life because it was the mantra I said.
Right.
When I changed my mantra, things changed.
Awesome.
Just wait, you two. I got one other person there too. For this minute. Yeah. Is that clear?
Yeah. Yeah.
The past is what happened 1 second ago. Not a few events, my dear.
Uh-huh.
Your tinker toys when you were 2 years old, that's the past. Dwell on that part. Because pride, conceit can be just as involved in the negative as it can in the positive. So if I am aware of where I have been slighted more often than I am aware of where I have been held, I need to go shopping in my past and find a few more holdings.
Find a few more...
times where I was held. Not the times where I was abandoned. I need to find the memory. Even if I can only find one, I should repeat it over and over and over to get over my tendency. Because I don't know about you, Barry, but I do know that I am the queen of self-pity. Well, you may be, but you don't look very good at it to me. I think you should privately, if you really want to do it, you know, we could make an appointment, because although I have retired, I still remember, you know, a few of the finer points of the art. So, but like... But, like, it is not something I want to continue as a career choice because I don't like the results of that career choice.
No,
does this make sense to you, my dear?
Yes, it does.
So I had to go shopping for the things I did get in my past.
I totally hear you. Yeah.
I had to change my rosary from, oh, how I have suffered, oh, how I have suffered, oh, how I, you know? Because I did that. I did my 100,000. Actually, I did 1,000,000. I don't know if any of you have done 1,000,000 of anything, but I did 1,000,000. And there were other ones that I preferred not to do. And I didn't even know I preferred not to do them. Until I realized that this was so habitual. Then I started trying to look for other ones, and it was hard for me to find them. Because that mantra had pretty well I had become that deity. I could look in the mirror and see lots of things to be pitiful about. And so could anybody else.
Can I just interject?
I don't know, sure. Okay. Yeah, all right.
I was
I'll
being
drink
so
water.
Facetious when I said I'm the king of self-pity, you know. I have had a lot. You know, I do kindness every day.
I know, but that's not the point. The point is the memories you don't remember. I know that. Barry, the point is the memories that you don't bring up. The little moments that you don't bring up. Start saying the mantra of some of those. Remember what you felt like as a child after a rainstorm and the smell when you first went outside after a rainstorm. And recreate that moment and give that to yourself and make that more of your living past. There is a mantra, man. That's a powerful mantra.
Can I just say one more thing?
Well, there's a lineup here.
Okay. This will be very
the
quick.
Bus, the queue is getting longer.
Okay.
But yes, go for
quick.
It. Yes.
You know what my first memory in my life is?
No,
I had a croup a lot when I was a kid. I had a croup. And I had been in the hospital and I was home and my dad was holding me. And that's the first memory in my life, my dad holding me. So that's a good memory too.
Yeah, so, you know, base that one and then go to a second memory. What's the first thing I remember smelling? Ask yourself. Use your different senses. What was the first thing I remember hearing? Because that's touch, isn't it? So now use your other senses and go shopping. Get a few more mantra to fill that past out so it's got a different quality too. Is that useful? Okay, who's first? You? Okay, Justine.
And so do you.
And when you change, the past changes too. Mm. Or like the Buddhists say, when you awaken, your past awakens. Mm. Isn't that beautiful? Mm. Even a little awakening. And it's a little awakening past. And you had something?
This is what I was going to ask you, what you change your world to.
Go into your senses and look.
I was asking you what you changed your mind to.
Yeah, the boredom forced me. Even I got bored with it.
So it stopped with, I've suffered so much to...
What it changed to is, and I had, let me consider this. When I really realized that, there was such a sense of interest in the power of mantra that my mantra changed to, isn't it interesting how our minds shape? And I began to look at that more clearly. And I think I couldn't do that until I gave myself permission to stop being guilty. Does that make sense to you? So when I could stop being guilty, then my mantra could become one of how we change. That's as clearly as I remember it at the time. I hope that's honest. You know how memories shift in different states, but that's as clearly as I can remember it. Any questions, answers, comments, or complaints? I thought we had somebody else with their hand up there. That... No?
Okay, I have one more little question. Nobody else has a question right now. When you talked about the wind with no eyes, what does that mean, wind with no eyes?
The material world has power, but no way to see how that power is developing. No power to see cause and effect is ignorant of cause and effect. So, for example, earth, which is linked to hunger, is always after more corn chips. I mean, food. Right? And is never satisfied with these possessions, always wants this and this and this and this, but never sees where it's going to put them. Did you ever read Alice in Wonderland? Do you remember when Alice was in the boat? And she sees all these beautiful bulrushes. And she says, and they smell so good. And she's in this boat, and she, oh, these bulrushes. And she goes to the front of the boat, and she reaches out her arms, and she gathers them in. And by pulling them like that, the boat gets pulled forward. But she's just, oh, and she pulls them right out of the water, and she just loves them some more. Oh, these are so... But look at those ones. And she throws them behind her and she reaches for the next bunch. Oh, these four. Oh. Oh, God. But look at those ones. Oh. And the boat is being pulled. And there's no sense of where it's going. Right? And that's that hunger for experience, you know, for possessions, for hunger. It doesn't see where it's going. It just is hunger. The desire for approval is the same. When the desire for approval doesn't have a consciousness, anything that gives approval, it will respond to. Right? Desire for power is the same. The desire for peacefulness is the same. They don't have eyes, and there isn't necessarily a seeing that, you know, it doesn't matter how many bulrushes you pick, you know. You're never going to find the perfect one. I have a friend, I asked her to find me a perfect stone. That was about 4 years ago. I don't know, she hasn't brought one lately. She hasn't mentioned it to me. They don't have an end in sight. They're just moving, you know, the winds. Consciousness has the ability to see, but it doesn't have the power to move. That aspect of your life that has the power to move doesn't have the power to see. As two of the three gunas, which we talked about last night, right? Yes, ma'am.
Especially when a person begins to be grateful or develop gratitude or appreciation, and like what begins to happen? Like things will change, but what changes? Or is that right thought, part of right thought?
I would think that would be awareness, really, you know. This is a precious human birth. And to allow gratitude for that. You know, see, you're asking me, and my immediate response was intelligence. You finally become intelligent. You know, I realize the position, however brief it is, and the gratitude for it, or whoever made me, whatever shoulders, giant shoulders I am standing on. This is such a wonderful opportunity. I'm grateful. But what I'm not sure I understand your question, so.
Okay, I was thinking more in the concrete sense, when one begins to really purposefully appreciate very concrete things in their life or situations, like very specific things. Is that an opening for other insights and other...
Don't you think so? Because it cuts down on the sense of what you don't have. It cuts down on the blind desire.
Does it sort of take the edge off the suffering a bit?
Well, because, yeah, you don't think that you don't have anything. Yeah, surely it does. Some people are very driven to always attain and never have the opportunity to experience what they have attained. So for them, it's very difficult to practice Dharma because the human birth is precious, because there's enough dissatisfactoriness to ask a question and enough satisfactoriness to get an answer. You have to quit running and be at home for when the doorbell rings. Am I speaking to your question? I'm not sure I understand your question, you see.
Yeah, I don't think I'm really articulating the question, so I'm just going to think about what you said and think more.
So sometimes people get very involved in trying always to do the right thing, and don't get to explore being as right. If there is something that is to be found, it can only be found in the present moment. So you have to be in the present moment to find it, don't you? Probably the best way to be in the present moment is start seeing what you're grateful for. See how fortunate we are. I don't know if I have...
Yeah, that helps.
Okay. You notice this beautiful gold light in your hearts, which you're all grateful for, and it spreads through your body, pours out through your pores in all directions, above, below, in front, behind, right, left, four quarters. Wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, speech, or mind, just feel this light as temporarily as washing it, and you think whatever awesomeness has been gathered by our coming together is shared with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together is shared with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Thank you for your great compassion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Must be tea time. Are you thinking it?
Sort of. Trying to be quiet at the same time.
Oh, really? Why?
To be polite.
That's interesting. I'm surprised at you.